What's going on, everybody? This is Chris from the Warrior Soul Podcast. I'm over here with Andrew and our good friend, Tony Floreal. You might remember Tony Floreal from episode 14 when we talked about the flow state. We're just actually down here hanging out in Redondo Beach, California. We took a good walk along the beach, been talking about some subjects. And I said, you know, what a good opportunity to maybe record a show for everybody, just out of good conversation and good times. And we've been talking a little bit about the problems we all face and how we build them up as problems in our minds. And, you know, what we accept is our reality and the ways we can change our realities. And, it's a really interesting subject when you actually think about it, because so many of us, we build up our problems as something that's unique to us, that's unique to us as human beings. But when you consider the fact that there's so many of us here on this earth, and everybody's going through their own version of reality, their own version of their own struggle, we really need to start considering the fact that our problems are often what we make them. And Tony had been talking a good bit about some of his experiences, and Andrew had been talking a good bit about some of his experiences as well. You know, guys, one question I want to pose to both of you is, when is a problem a problem? And when, you know, are problems all bad? Can we live a life without problems? And what would a life without problems be like? And I guess I'll use that to start the conversation.
That's a very interesting and
in-depth question. I think it goes back to, you can't experience the sweet without the sour, right? We need both sides of the equation. We need light and we need darkness. And not saying that either one is good or bad, they're necessary. And so I don't think necessarily that chronic suffering is necessary, but we need to go through trials in life to come to certain understandings. And that can only be done if you're trying to look at it in the right mindset. As, you know, how can I learn from this? What can I take away? How can I improve this? Because when you break it down, I think life is just really about choices. And if you continue to make the same choices, you're going to continue to get the same opportunities to make that choice until you can get it right. And so I think we get stuck in these sets that we continue to make these choices and we can become stagnant, you know? And in short, problems are necessary for growth, but only from the point that you can use it to draw on that as a new perspective to make it, turn that into something positive when that situation happens again in the future.
Yeah, I think it's all about the way I've seen it now is feedback, whether it's good or bad or positive or negative. But, you know, is it helping me move forth in my life where I feel like I'm in more control versus not being in control? So what I mean by that is, like, you know, a lot of us have these experiences, especially when you're younger, it starts there where we're like teased, you know, maybe the bully or something, and that person is saying something to you and you have this emotional response where your feelings get hurt. And now in this sort of time in my life, I'm looking back at my history and I'm looking at, like, you know, these so-called like problems. In this case, it's feedback from another person that's teasing me. And, you know, what is this energy, or what is teasing? Like, my feelings are getting hurt. Like, why are my feelings getting hurt? How is it that somebody who's speaking words that are a certain pitch, frequency, and tone, it's affecting me? Like, I had this insight the other day, and I've had it before, but it really like became solid for me this time around, because it was like that thing about sticks and stones can break my bone, but words and names can't hurt me, right? Like it's pretty true, actually. Like, how is it that somebody that's like making fun of you or maybe yelling at you, like, why are we getting emotionally or why are we responding? And it comes down to, like, I guess evolution of the fight or flight mechanisms in our brain that we perceive a threat. But at a certain point, you start to realize that you actually have a way of controlling or being in control of this system that no longer hijacks you, and that you can actually look at it in a different way and say, oh, that person is upset at me, but I don't really need to like play that game, and I can just be cool about it. Like, they can express how they feel, they can be angry about it, they can like tease you, make fun of you, and you can actually just kind of like laugh, or like maybe instead of like responding or reacting to it this time around, you actually have the control, the ability to be conscious in the moment and feel whatever that is coming from that other person, that energy, and then alchemize it, like convert it into something else, or turn it into a comedy, make that person laugh, make a face, do something different, which they call like pattern interrupting. So to me, that's like a place of empowerment where, you know, these things, these stimulus, this feedback that happens in our life is there, but at a certain point you start to see like, oh, I don't even need to like repeat or go down repeating Groundhog Day over and over again. I actually can like change the way I react to these situations, and then when they repeat themselves, now you can like go in there and like rewrite your life or create something new.
So like in the reality of things, in a lot of ways, it's really just how we perceive things, right? It's just how we approach things. And, you know, in a lot of ways, if I look back at my life, the main fuel for my life has been my negative experiences, has been my problems, right? Or quote unquote problems. I think that if I didn't go through a lot of the hard times I've gone through, I wouldn't be here talking. I wouldn't have this podcast. I wouldn't, you know, be working with Andrew or yourself on a lot of different things. I wouldn't have met either of you guys. And, you know, in a lot of ways, these negative experiences have guided me. So I think like one good question we could all ask ourselves is, why are people in such a quest to live a quote unquote perfect life? And why do we covet this life without problems? Why do we covet an easy life in the first place? When in reality, it's the hard life that brings us to, in many ways, to where we need to grow, to become better people, to learn. You know, and just knowing both your stories, I mean, Andrew, you know, in a lot of ways, your crucible shaped you, you know, and who you are. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you went through some hell, but you came out the other end more educated and with your life's mission in tow. So, I mean, I think in a lot of ways, kind of with the self-help industry, you know, the way we see things where you're supposed to live this kind of perfect life and you're supposed to, you know, keep a gratitude journal and, you know, meditate every day and things like that. This is all good, but they're tools, right? They're not supposed to make your life perfect. They're not supposed to make it to the point where you're not going to experience negativity in your life. Because once negativity ceases to exist in your life, then what is it? Where are you? What are you going to do? What are you going to do to improve? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think we're culturally conditioned to look for happiness and fulfillment in all the wrong places. You know, so if I could just have a bigger house, or if I just had a different job, or if I had this material item or that material item, then I'd be happy. You know what I mean? But, and that's what a lot of modern society is based upon. You know, you look at all the media or the commercials or this, that, and the other, it's putting out these fallacies of what a man should be or a woman should be, this, that, and the other. And it's something that absolutely nobody could live up to. And so a person thinks they need to achieve that level of looks or whatever to be on par with everybody else. And it's just not the case. And so what I'm saying is that, when you look for fulfillment, when you look for purpose through just the material world, and those things, you put your hope and your trust in that, then it's going to continue to let you down. And I think that's a lot of what we see, with the massive amounts of depression and anxiety that we have in the Western society, and specifically in America.
Absolutely. And I mean, it also, in a lot of ways, when I think social media in general, too, we look around and everybody's kind of just showing off and pretending, and maybe they aren't pretending, maybe they are pretending, but everybody tries to put their best face forward on things. And I think there's a real deficit of vulnerability, humility, and authenticity going on in today's society. And maybe that's hurting us. Maybe in some ways we need to see life warts and all before we can actually appreciate it and appreciate all the good things we have around us, and to truly experience gratitude, to truly experience, thankfulness for the simple things that are around us. Like right now we're sitting in an air conditioned room in Southern California. Traffic sucked today, but other than that, my life is pretty awesome. You know what I mean? We had a good meal today and everything. I mean, none of us are sitting here rolling around in dough in the Playboy Mansion in a grotto or anything like that. But life is good. And I think that in a lot of ways, what the media tries to portray is that we need to try and strive for this other thing, this kind of fantasy lifestyle that's kind of being fed to us.
Yeah, the American dream, I just think about people are using social media or the internet and hiding behind a screen, like that's given this sort of fake sense of security, and we're losing touch with this physical reality that we live in outside of technology and the ability to communicate with each other, like face to face in the flesh. And that's in some ways getting retarded. Like that's a skill that should be taught in school about communication. We were talking about emotional intelligence earlier with the ability to, how do you respond in a situation when you're a child? Sometimes you're going to be like wailing and flailing and, kicking and screaming. But at a certain point, like you sort of outgrow that behavior. If you had something to give you an example of like how to go about the same situation in a mature way. So back to what we were talking about earlier, with this sense of like, do we need problems in order to grow? Do we need these things in order to create solution? I think that at a certain point, maybe we're so self-centered that we're looking for the answer. We're looking for something to fulfill us. And the American dream is teaching us to look outside of ourselves, to get this perfect job, the perfect mate, the perfect house, the perfect car, perfect friends. And when some people actually achieve all those things, and I've seen them with like my clients, that they have everything materialistic, yet they're so empty inside in their soul, and in my case I had to go through that same process, and it was because of those things I'm grateful for. Like it enabled sort of like my ego nutshell to crack. And I finally like discovered that nothing outside of me could fulfill me. I had that, what I call a holy shift. I realized like I was whole already, and that everything else was icing on the cake, and everything else is just icing, a bonus to that, a cherry on the top, whipped cream, you know, and that just makes a beautiful life. And I can't imagine seeing a movie where all things is just this social media positivity, like fakeness. It's not what life is about. But at the same time, like, once you reach this level where you are butting your head against a wall and you're like wondering like why there's not a door there, you know, and finally you realize, oh, I just got to go left or right and there's a door. Like, I don't think we necessarily need problems to grow at that point. At that point, I think you can like accelerate your life, like the things that you are dreaming, your purpose, without like having to use problems, you know. I think in the beginning that they're helpful to help us discover who we really are and what we're about and why we're here. But once you discover that, then you're just like free. You're free to create. You're free to like, you know, materialize your vision.
So it's a matter of finding the mission first, finding out who you are, what's important in your life. Right, because I think that's something that problems can do or hard times can do. They can really show you what to care about in life and what not to care about. And I think part of the problem we see in society is that, you know, people end up focusing on almost too many things, you know, and in some ways we overcomplicate our lives with things that really at the end don't matter, you know, worrying about what kind of car we're going to drive, worrying about, you know, whether or not we have a big screen TV in our house, things like that. And even in some ways, you know, worrying about where we stand in society as far as what other people think of us, what other people think of our occupation, our jobs, or whether or not we have jobs and things like that. In a lot of ways, I think that can really play a role in making us more negative when we don't need to be.
Yeah, I think, you know, and the thing you have to look at is, you know, why am I doing what I'm doing? And is it in any way, shape, or form, is this action being done because I'm worried about what somebody else might think about me if I don't do it this way or do it that way? You know what I mean? And I think that that's not being true to ourselves, and we have to be able to identify that and kind of self-correct and then say, you know what, it doesn't matter if so-and-so or whatever doesn't, you know, doesn't agree with me, or we don't have this in common anymore. I'm doing the things I'm doing in my life because that's what I feel are the best things for me. And if it doesn't inhibit anybody else's well-being, you know, or your own, then who is anybody to say what you should or shouldn't be doing? But I think, you know, worrying about so much is what somebody else is going to think, as opposed to, is this the best thing for me? Is this the best thing for the team I'm involved with, our overall mission, or, you know, whatever you're working towards that's bigger than yourself? You know, is it falling in line with your whys for that? Then it's probably the right thing to do. If you're thinking or worried about what somebody else thinks, then that's where you need to pause and reflect, you know. And just because something you don't want to go in line with what the majority of people are doing doesn't really make you, you know, a weirdo. It just makes you be recognized for having the courage to say, I don't really care if everybody's swimming this way. I'm going to go a different way because I think that's going to be right for my life. And anytime I've done that, you know, we were better for it, you know, always.
What do you think about So a lot of guys out there, particularly guys who listen to this podcast, a lot of them are still looking for their next why, right? You know, a lot of them have left the military. A lot of them are kind of in this transition period of this of their life, and they're trying to figure out their next thing to care about, I guess you could say, or their big thing to care about. And just to put it in context, I think that there's a lot of guys, when they can't find a big thing to care about, they find a lot of little things to care about. And maybe they even listen to society a little bit more about having society tell them what they should care about. And I think what this leads into in a lot of ways is society saying, well, if you aren't acting, coming off what you're saying, Andrew, if you're not acting in certain ways, then you're abnormal, or you have a problem, or you have a psychological problem, or you need some sort of help or pill or medication or program that's going to fix you. If people are in this kind of state of purpose purgatory, I guess we'll call it, then what do you think are the best ways to kind of try and find it?
I think it's a really simple deal. You think about, hey, what would I be doing if there was absolutely no possibility of failure? You know what I mean? Or no fear of failure. If I knew with a shadow of a doubt I could do this and I wouldn't fail, I would do blank. And that's it, man. That's how you should live. You should go after your life without worrying about a fear of failure. I worry about living my life without a fear of living it to its fullest potential. You know what I mean? So that was always an arena I was able to really pursue what I thought was my purpose at the time. And that's always led to what I understood now was fulfillment. You know, it wasn't necessarily that general thing. I was an athlete for a long time. I was an operator for a long time. And, you know, I thought each one was my purpose, my identity. And what I realized when, you know, I couldn't do either one anymore was, you know what, it wasn't solely because I was an operator. It was because that was my purpose, because that allowed me to be fulfilled, because I belonged to something that was bigger. I was serving something bigger than myself. And that's always a way that you can find, you know, a good way to find what you should do, you know. And I remember when I was, I was without purpose, after suffering the TBIs and everything else we were going through that time in our life. And, you know, my dad, I was talking to him on the phone. He said, you know, son, I can't understand everything that you've been through. And I know that you're hurting, but if you could find a way to make your life about somebody else, look to add value to somebody else, I think you'll find that will always add value to you. I didn't hear it at the time, but I did later. And when I applied that to my life, it repurposed my life. And again, it led me to think, okay, well, I can get better. And then once I got better, I can help other people get better. And then, you know, we can take this to the next level and things just begin to evolve. But it goes back to doing something without any fear of failure or any fear of what anybody else is going to think about you. And we get conditioned, unfortunately, from a very young age that we start to build up this facade, this false self-ego. And we were talking about reacting to things. You know, it's these are sensory reactions. So we feel, you know, some kind of threat or insult to our ego. We feel this emotion. We feel this feeling. And you got to understand, like, that's all it is. This is a feeling, and it's going to pass. And so instead of involving yourself in a behavior or an action or a thought that is not going to elevate you or elevate those around you, then we don't want to react to those emotions that way. And I think that's what we miss teaching our children at the fundamental levels, that, hey, these emotions do not define you. And I see it with my 2-year-old and my 3-year-old. They're dealing with these emotions, and they don't know how to deal with it. So they kick and they scream and they, you know, do all of the fits that you hear about 2- and 3-year-olds doing. But I see that with grown adults, but in different ways. And it comes out, you know, as being resentful or being bullying or, you know, all these other down-regulated emotions or attributes. Are, I think, really, when you get down to it, not being conscious of where these sensations are originating from. And that's because most of the time, I think, is that we don't do things consciously. We do it subconsciously. And those programs have been downloaded, you know, since before birth up to age 7. and they're not serving to us because we're just a product of the environment at that stage. The child can't have the ability to be conscious, to be logical, to be analytical. So they just download all the actions and the behaviors and the environment that they're around. And then unbeknownst to them, they carry those reactions forward because it goes from the neocortex to the limbic systems to the cerebellum. And cerebellum is when it becomes an automatic process. So when you do something long enough, it becomes that automatic process. You don't have to think about it anymore. So somebody says something to you that you perceive in a certain way, you fire back automatically. You don't even have to think about it. And you don't even you're not really even conscious of it. Why? Because again, it's a subconscious program that was downloaded for something in your environment, probably between 0 and 7 years of age. And so the way to kind of caveat that is to become conscious of the way you deal with things, to become conscious of your emotions, and then you're no longer going to be controlled by them, you know. But your body is supposed to be the servant to the mind, but in many cases, it's become, you know, what was once the servant is now the master, and the body is running the show, and it's just reacting off the sensory perceptions that it's receiving from the outside environment. And so the real magic is, can you elevate your internal state to be greater than your environment? Tony, do you think we can do that?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, I've had many years of this life to practice and experience. I think that's what it's all about. Because, again, we talk about, you know, all these different things, but, you know, we have to live life and experience things. And, you know, I think the true masters are the ones that are conscious in the moment, that can self-correct in the moment, and not allow those past programmings to override them or hijack them. So, you know, in my experience, I've been able to do that. I think that's what learning is. I think that's what kids do naturally. And, you know, I think back to the question about veterans and what they do during transition is like, well, what did you dream of when you were a kid? You know, like, what did you want to do before someone told you that that was impossible or that doesn't make any money or whatever the reason is, you know? What were those things that you wanted to do when you were a kid? And at the same time, you know, like Andrew was saying, like if there wasn't any failure, even, you know, people have the fear of success. So like sometimes you'll get to a place where you're starting to develop momentum, you're learning quickly, you may be monetizing something, you may be outgrowing your environment, and the people in your environment are like crabs in a pot that you're climbing out of that hot pot and they're pulling you down, you know, and so you self-sabotage because you're becoming successful, because you're going into a new, foreign, unknown place where, you know, it's not familiar and you're meeting new people, but you're more comfortable in your older environment. So you're going to like, you know, maybe go out and party too much or take drugs or do something that, you know, sabotage yourself. And then next thing you know, you're back where you started and it's just a vicious cycle. So these are just things to look out for because we all do them. You know, I think that anybody says that they're, you know, mastered that part of life, I think that they're full of shit, you know.
No doubt.
I think that you know, that's the beauty is we are what in our case we're big kids, you know. Like I think I like to say that I've matured because I'm more self-aware and self-conscious, and I'm able to again self-correct my course when I'm off course and my vision. And, you know, I think that's what true maturity is, to be like, I guess, childlike and not childish in an adult body. Cause there's plenty of adults that are adults. They look like adults, but they're really kids inside.
What tools have you used to become more self-aware and self-conscious, would you say?
The biggest tool for me, or there have been a few, but I like sitting by myself. You can call it mindfulness, meditation, whatever it is. I mean, these are all just terminologies, but, you know, just look at kids, look at, you know, sometimes they just want to be by themselves, you know, and what's happening when you're by yourself. You may be asking a bunch of questions. You may be reflecting on the day. You may be thinking about a memory. You may be daydreaming, thinking about the future. But that's always been like a tool for me, is to isolate myself, to even practice closing my eyes, getting my brain into alpha theta state, doing deep breathing, and being aware of my body and these feelings and emotions, and learning to be comfortable in like my skin, you know, because the sooner you can feel comfortable in your skin, that's what natural confidence is to me. It's, yeah, sure, faking it till you make it, but really that's still fake. You know, if you really want to get in touch with who you really are, then the best way I found was to find some place to sit in silence and really just feel. And you don't have to get all esoteric and do all these mantras and chants. You can do that. You can go explore that, experiment, and learn different techniques and stuff. But, you know, if you didn't know any of that, there weren't any holy books out there, there weren't any religious stuff, you know, what would you have done? You know, I think it's natural to have a place of isolation. Another tool I would say would be to talk. You know, it's when do we actually talk with each other and share each other our feelings, you know, and have a place, a safe place where you can like express anger in a mature way, like to be able to raise your voice, but have the other person understand that you're just expressing yourself. It's nothing necessarily wrong. Now, if you start throwing shit or punching stuff or hurting the other person across, well, then obviously that's not the thing to do. But talking to people helps, and I also found writing my feelings down, like writing. It's also helped moving the body itself. So there's a lot of tools.
What age did you start meditating? Because I know you started pretty early, right?
Yeah, pretty early, I think, because growing up in San Francisco and in an Asian family, Filipino, we had a lot of sort of like Buddhas around the house.
Yeah.
And you see this like, you know, fat, happy man, and you're like, his eyes are closed and he's in a sitting position, and you're like, what's that all about? So you mimic it. And,
mm-hmm.
and then you're going, after a while, you're like, huh, there's something to this, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how long did it take for you to be able to quiet your mind, you know? Is that something that came naturally to you, or did you have to work a while at it, or, you know, how long did it take for you to understand that process and how to get there, you know, for you personally?
It's still a process after all these years. I've gotten better at it. I would say that I'm able to become the witness and observer of these thoughts that are just like ticker tape running through your mind, but it's running all on its own. It's got its own energy. And it's like this river that's flowing, you know, and mm-hmm. every so often you get caught up in the river and you think that you're that river, you know, and it's turbulent. But once you could kind of pop out of the river and like observe, you know, let's say this raft, this boat that's floating down the river, and you can sort of like take an eagle's eye view. We're talking about getting elevation, you know,
mm-hmm.
to be able to witness yourself. Like, what exactly is me? What is this thing called me and I, this thing called Tony Floreal, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you start to ask these questions. And when you sit through silence and you're able to take on these like different perspectives. What it would be like if I was looking at Tony Floreal through Andrew Marr's eyes or from Chris Albert's eyes? Like, what would it be like to be in their shoes? What would it be like to be in Piper's shoes, you know,
that's
or her paws, you know?
Yeah. We got a little four-legged friend over here with us, Piper. She's just chilling. But that's interesting. I've done a lot with meditation and trying to meditate and trying to go for the empty mind concept. And I think it's good to as a practice. I also think that it's a bad thing if you're coming down on yourself for not being able to have an empty mind. And so in a lot of ways, when I go to meditate, it's almost not meditation anymore. I almost do more like a Tony Robbins style priming, where I'm starting to envision kind of light, and I'm starting to think of all the things that I'm grateful for in my life, and really trying to appreciate those things and to spend a few moments of my own time really feeling grateful, and then really envisioning that gratitude going out to those people that I love. And because I think that's like when people talk about gratitude journals, like write down three things you're grateful for today, write down three things that'll make today awesome. I think the thing they forget about that is that that's supposed to translate into energy that you're going to use to do things with your day and to do things with your life. And so I think that if you're not thinking about it in terms of how you're going to use that energy to give to other people, it's almost like a waste. You know, the very act of just writing it into the notebook, I think, in my opinion, isn't enough. You got to really envision how your gratitude is going to infect other people or help other people, or how you're going to use that positive energy you have to help other people.
Yes, so it's like another tool that you mentioned, right? So it's, you know, this concept about meditation, I mean, the modern word for it is being mindful of every moment, and it's mindfulness. And, you know, this thing about having an empty mind, I mean, it's this sort of, it's an interesting thing, because I've had moments where I did have an empty mind, and sometimes, you know, you have to sit for quite a long time, you know, an hour and a half before that even actually happens. And it is like a skill, but at the same time, like, you know, I always say, like, you know, have an open mind, but not so open that your brain falls out, you know. Right. Like, there's a reason why we have the prefrontal cortex, which is our part of our brain that, you know, plans for things, that has critical thinking, that you know, enables us to sort of think logically and plan for stuff. So, you know, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Like, there's parts of your brain that are there for a reason. And some of the Eastern philosophies, I think they're more like metaphors, just like, you know, fundamental Western religions, you know, like, these things are like stories that are not exactly literal, you know, and it's just something that is
spiritual,
like,
truths.
Yeah, they're given like clues, you know, things like empty mind. They're like pointing you in a direction. It's not the actual answer. It's that the experience is the answer, the realization. And then, and even greater, because you got these people that are meditating their lives away. You know, I've fallen into that trap where I got high off my own stash, you know, my own endogenous opiates, the internal pharmacy that my body produced, you know, all these amazing feel-good chemicals, and I've blissed out in my mind, think I'm enlightened, you know. Meanwhile, my marriage is falling apart, you know, I was holding a job, and I'm losing weight because I'm barely eating, but I'm blissed out, man. I'm high off my own shit, you know? And I don't think that's the answer as well. The answer I find in this modern age is to integrate all these different perspectives, and based on that information and data that you learned over the years, is to let that coalesce or converge into actualization, like actualizing your vision, holding strong your vision, and that it, watching it materialize through the grind, through the flow, you know, finding that sweet spot where you're able to maneuver in this life and find that place where you aren't dull, because you still feel, but you're not feeling so much that you're too sensitive to what other people think, or these so-called invisible stresses that we were talking about earlier. So, you know, finding that light and dark, as we were talking about it, you know, you need both in this plane that we're living in, as far as we know, because the rest of it, we don't know. We don't know where we came from. We don't know where we're going. But as far as we know, we're recording this. You guys are listening to this. And that's what, to me, is the actual reality.
The meditation for getting to the end state of having a clear mind, you know, it's just, I think a lot of times it's not well understood. And that's because of just growing up in this culture. You know, I was never exposed to meditation, or, you know, well, that's not Christianity, so obviously that's wrong. You know what I mean? Or the people who do that are obviously lost. So just kind of being ignorant, culturally ignorant to it. So having no understanding of it, and then trying to, you know, I was introduced to it first when I was at Walter Reed, and started implementing it in my life, over the last 2 years. And I understood what you said, Tony. And it's, I think the end state is becoming self-aware, and meditation is a tool that can be used, but it's not a necessary tool. It's just a tool. And there's 101 different ways to do it. And, is quieting the mind necessary? No, absolutely not. But could it be an added benefit? Yeah, definitely could. You know, I was able to become more self-aware, raise my level of consciousness by quieting my mind and understanding that I had the power to do that. And then being able then to say, okay, I'm now no longer being run by the system, the operating system, you know, I'm outside of it, and I can now focus my consciousness and do other things, incredible things. And you start to understand that. You start to really understand, you know, what are these natural states of being? And I can tell you, it's nothing that we've been conditioned to think they are. I think our natural state of being is one of joy and gratitude and selflessness and selfish, selfless behavior and all the other upregulated emotions, elevated emotions. And unless you can find a way to quiet your mind, whatever the method is, you get caught up in this rat race where you kind of forget that. And, you go, and we're talking about, you know, what should we do, transition for next? And you think, okay, well, I'm going to bank this decision on where I should go with my life, on what the pension is and the insurance. You know what I mean? If you're making a fucking decision on what you should do with your life over insurance, and insurance is a deciding factor, man, I mean, is that what you thought that you would want to say when you were 18? You know, is that what you really were going after? That was living to you, you know? So, that was never living to me. And I, you know, I dare say it's not really living to anybody. We do need certain things in our life, but, we can use these tools to become more aware of the self, to realize that, you know, oh my God, I'm doing this because this is what my dad did and his dad did and his dad did, which was based off secondhand information, which was based off secondhand information, which is based off secondhand information, which was based off, guess what, secondhand information. You know, I'm going to go and find these things out and discover them for myself through experience, and, find out how I can live a better life. And to me, that's what, those are some of the attributes that meditation affords us.
I think, one of the things, when we think about things like meditation, when we think about consciousness and trying to improve our perceptions of this life and how we're living, I think one of the fundamental questions is, what are we going to allow to interrupt that flow? What are we going to allow to interrupt our states of being? And you know, I think back to my youth, for example, because I've screwed up a lot in my life. You know, I've done a lot of different things, but I don't really regret the mistakes that I've made at all. I don't regret the lessons that I've learned from them. What I regret, I think, is how much I let myself be bothered by them, how much I allowed myself to get pissed off at life, how much I allowed myself to get annoyed by things that didn't really matter. You know, for example, it used to be that somebody could say, maybe my girlfriend would say something to me, or maybe my mom would say something to me, and it would ruin my day, you know, or I'd have a negative interaction with somebody, it would ruin my day, or traffic would be bad, and I'd be pissed off for the rest of the day because of the traffic, or things like that. And as I've gotten older and, you know, gone through some things and realized that life is really a precious gift, I really have started to understand that the more I allow stuff like that to creep in, the more I'm giving up on living day to day. You know, the more I'm because I think that in a lot of ways when I was younger, I had these written scripts out. If this happens, then I will lose my shit and start throwing shit around the room. If this happens, I will start beeping my horn and cursing out the window.
You know, and how much is that is because you saw somebody else do that, you know
right,
what I mean?
Exactly.
And you thought that was the way it was done.
Yep.
You know what I mean? You didn't know any different. You're like, oh, when this situation happens, we react this way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, that too. And I mean, just serving in the Marine Corps, we had a million scripts for that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, if Lance Corporal so-and-so does this, then I do this, you
mm-hmm.
know, and then we almost react right off the bat.
Yeah. What about genetics too? I mean, you look at little kids slugging each other, you know,
mm-hmm.
like, I think that maybe that's a primal thing that's being expressed possibly.
Well, I think there's a difference there too between like somebody, like I think physical altercation is actually something that happens because kids do it. You watch kids, they start playing around on mats. I don't even necessarily think that's an inherently violent thing on the part of kids. It's just part of our survival mechanism and things we do.
Yes, I'm thinking.
But
right.
But these other things, these mental confrontational things, in my mind, they're almost – those are the real damaging things, that when we start to attach our emotion to these types of confrontations. Because if we all – I mean, we're not going to do that right now. But if we all started wrestling in here and stuff like that, it wouldn't be like a freaking – you know,
traumatic event,
violent traumatic event.
Yeah,
probably
yeah.
Be pretty funny.
Yeah,
but because Andrew would kick both our asses. But you know, beyond that, I think it's the emotion we attach to the event that really matters.
Yeah,
know?
Or something that like your parents said to you, or somebody that close said to you, and you like felt worse because of it.
Right.
And then you replay that story over and over in your head.
I think when you see the malicious intent, like in kids or, you know, maybe grade school type stuff, is what we're talking about, Chris, is like they're having these feelings and these emotions and they have no idea how to process it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're probably being talked down to or even worse at home. And so all they know to do is to transfer that energy to something lower and an easier target, you know what I mean? And I think a lot of times that's what's going on. And now, you know, we want to talk and throw dirt on the bullies, you know, today with all these anti-bullying campaigns and this, that, and the other. But what we really need to talk about is what environments are causing that child to behave in that manner, you
right.
know what I mean?
Yeah.
Instead of, you know,
right.
wanting to beat
so
the kid.
Insecure, yeah.
yeah.
That and, you know, you also have to look at the other side of it too. What programs are keeping the kids from standing up for themselves?
Mm-hmm.
You
know, yeah, exactly. Speaking up.
What
yeah.
low self-esteem is keeping that kid from speaking up? And, you know, we have situations today in colleges and in schools across the country where, you know, like academic texts are being banned, you know,
mm-hmm.
that kind of stuff for being too offensive or making people feel sad or bad or things like that. We've got, you know, the safe space debate, which I don't want to get into here on this podcast, but you know, the whole idea that people need safe spaces now because they don't want to be confronted or they don't want to deal with certain things. And there,
yeah, it's the pussification of a generation, man.
Yeah, yeah. In
yeah.
a lot of ways, there
yeah,
it
yeah,
is.
It's talking to each other, texting.
You know, it starts when every kid gets a trophy, you know,
right.
and you're creating a victim mentality, you know, at the very beginning. And that we see that play out in all kinds of different cultures, but that never works out good. You know what I mean? There needs to be there needs to be confrontation, you know, and we need to have those things, and understand what's the appropriate measures to react to that, you know,
right.
In an intelligent manner, because, you know, when it kind of shifted to me, there was a period that I was spanking, my children when they misbehaved, cause that was what was done to me. And, you know, I started to think, you know, about reflexive behavior and what am I, subconsciously downloading into them, you know, telling them that, don't do this and to learn this by physical pain through something that I'm going to do. And what I came to understand is that, anytime I did that is because in that moment I wasn't intelligent enough to solve that problem in a better manner. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And as soon as I thought that way, I was like, I don't care if there was a holy book that said something else or my parents think this or, you know, we did this growing up. I'm going to be more intelligent than the situation to have to resort to, you know, making a point with physical abuse, however it is, you know what I mean?
Right.
And I think you can shift that thinking to any parameter. Like, we don't want to do certain reactions or shoot, you know, shoot venom out at people, but we do it. And it's because, we get in these states that we make, less intelligent decisions, you know? And so that's what happens, man. We're doing things that, that a less intelligent person would do because we get caught up in the moment because we're not conscious of what's really going on. You know, I think that's where that can lead to if you're not conscious of it.
Yeah. And if you take that up to even, like relationships, like romantic relationships, we tend to sometimes put so much of our own insecurity into relationships, or I have at least in the past where, you know,
yeah, we're told somebody else is supposed to fulfill us or complete us,
right,
or to make us whole, or, you know, and that's the holy grail. If I could only meet this person, then I would be happy. And then you get married, and 3 months later, guess what? Nobody's happy.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
No, absolutely. And that's one of the things, like one of the things I've learned is that no matter what relationship you get into, you're going to experience some conflict. Now, there's different ways to react to that conflict, right? So, like, my girlfriend, like, it is absolutely wonderful. She's a great girl. You guys both know her, and you know, I've got
definitely the better half.
Yeah, definitely the better half. But at the same time, I've caught myself in situations where she'll say something to me, and I'll go and I'll mope and I'll marinate in it, and I will start to I won't talk to her for a little while and things like that. And I'm thinking to myself, after a while, I'm like, all right, but I love her and I want a good relationship with her. You know, in the past, I've been in other relationships where things evolved to screaming, things evolved to really bad fights. And, you know, one of the things that I've found is that I have to start seeing things from her perspective. And because, like, I truly love her and I want to be in a relationship with her, I have to try and understand where she's coming from. Otherwise it's kind of like operating with a blindfold, man. You know, you never know what you're walking into. You're going to constantly get into these fights, whether you try to or not. And you're going to feel like you're always being unjustly crucified, in the situation. And, I see that so much with at least male female relations, you know, men feeling like they're being unjustly crucified, or feeling like the woman's just doing things to make their life harder. When in fact, it's just a really big misunderstanding of and miscommunication, where the guy just doesn't really want to see things from her perspective. You know?
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of times what's happening specifically there is you've memorized a subconscious program, and this is how I respond to a female counterpart in this situation. And now you're being conscious saying, no, I don't want to do that anymore. That's not serving. But what happens is we get addicted to our own chemicals. All right, we produce the same chemical pathways over and over and over, and it hits the same cell receptor sites as heroin does. And so, again, unconsciously, subconsciously, you're not. But you're. How do you feel when that thing happens? You probably get an increased sense of energy, some focus, you know, a rush of adrenaline. Mm-hmm. And what happens is we become addicted to that. We don't even know it. And so we're trying now to replicate, the body's looking for ways to replicate that chemical cocktail at any form or fashion that it can do that, you know? And that's that downward spiral. But what you said, you know, looking at things through her perspective, you know, is key. You know, what is she seeing that I'm not? You know, you just have to start look at it, because I mean that's you know, a relationship, man. There's going to be give and take. And what I found in our marriage was, a lot of times when there is strife, it's exactly what you said. There's miscommunication. It's not that there was malicious intent on either side. It just wasn't communicated. Why? Why wasn't it communicated? Well, it's because I shut down and I didn't want to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And so I just thought she would understand that I felt this way, and then she would do action X, Y, or Z, and then she didn't do action X, Y, or Z, and I would get fucking pissed, and it would start to cycle, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it's just because, again, if I would have just taken the time to say, you know what, I don't appreciate that, and here's why. And we've come to this agreement now. It's like, hey, how long do we want to sit on a motion that has been produced between us that is not serving? And about as long as I want my 2-year-old to sit on that emotion. That's what we've come up with, you know. So we immediately try to, hey, if there's something going on that causes that, one, identify it, do your own work, but then have that common ground where we can both talk about it, and that's not going to lead to World War III.
Yeah.
You know? And, yeah. And let's stop the cycle of the same actions produce the same results. Let's make some better choices. And that's been beneficial in our marriage.
I'm thinking, like, what about, managing energy systems, or about health, and, you know, sort of making sure that, like, all our fluids are topped off in our car, right? Like, the mm-hmm. same with our bodies. Like, we don't really know. Maybe that other person was tired and said something that triggered them, and they just didn't get a good night's sleep, or maybe somebody you like died or something and just like reacted and took it out on you. Or, you know, there's these factors that I think that maybe would be mitigated if we actually took better care of ourselves, mm-hmm. you know, like ate less sugar, got more sleep, got more sunlight, like,
yeah.
you know, exercise, like when you actually start feeling better, like you're less reactive.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's almost like, it's foundational
yeah.
across the board. Like, what if people actually started to implement these things? Like, because when I take the time and do that for myself, I'm less reactive, you know, I'm more aware of the situation, and I'm able to respond accordingly.
That's one of the things that I've been contemplating a lot as a trainer, because we look so much at one of the biggest problems with fitness in today's society is that we focus so much on the aesthetic, right? And we think, you know, abs, ass, muscles, things like that. And the problem with that, I think, is that it becomes a luxury in our minds, right? We attach luxury to that. And if we attach luxury to that, then it's something that when we're in a deficit of something, whether it be money, time, or attention, it goes out the window. The reality is that fitness really should be something that's additive to every aspect of your life. It should make you better at your relationship. It should make you better at your job. It should make you a better business person if you have a business. It should make you a better person overall. And so in that way, when you look at it from that perspective, it almost becomes an essential aspect of your being. And if you see it from that perspective, it'll become a priority. And I think that one of the biggest mistakes I see people make when they get married or get in a relationship, and I've seen it over and over again, is that they tend to take their health, their fitness, the ways they take care of themselves, and kind of throw it out the window and say, all right, well, this can't be a priority anymore because I've got kids, or I've got I've got a wife, I've got people that need me around and things like that. So, I think that we have to transform that whole aesthetic aspect of it and begin to see it not as a pursuit in and of itself, but a pursuit that's going to help us in every other pursuit in our lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man, I agree. And, you know, the research supports it. You know, all of the positive benefits from leading a healthy lifestyle are specifically working out and getting cardiovascular exercise. It's going to lead to the ability to produce, you know, new brain cells, the ability to have neural plasticity. And we need these new experiences. We need these physical exertions. Our body needs that. It craves it biologically. Physiologically, we need these things in order to operate. You know, that's how we're going to be able to secrete additional waste to work a certain area out, because it needs to be repaired and regrown, you know, and that's part of the process. And the attributes on our emotional well-being, you know, are through the roof. And again, that's something that's well known. So saying that, hey, life is too busy to even take a 20-minute or 30-minute walk outside, you know, and there's no time for that, I don't think we're being true to ourselves. But when you look at the cost analysis of not doing it, it doesn't add up, man. So dead on, Chris. I agree totally.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I think that past paradigms and why people shy away from exercise is because there's, you know, sort of rocky mentality of, you know, grinding, you know, breaking down the muscles and breaking down the body, and, you know, you're sore the first few days, couple of weeks, you know, if you operate from that. But even at the level of professional sports, man, I like work with these athletes, and they're telling me, like, at the highest level, that they're treating them like, you know, they're running these athletes to the ground, and they're like, what, like, oh, you know, they're having non-contact injuries in a contact sport, you know. And, like, I think once people understand that, you know, one, don't compare yourself, because that's also part of media and aesthetics.
Yeah, no doubt.
You know, magazine covers and whatnot. But also to exercise to the point where you feel energized. Like, if you've gone to a point where you feel, like, depleted, then you've gone too far. So go to a place where you feel energized and then back away. And then every so often, push it, you know, put the metal to the pedal, go full throttle, see where your limits are. But you can't do that day in and day out without having the proper recovery resources. Like, you can't train that hard unless you're recovering that hard. And even at the highest level of professional sports, they're training insanely hard, but they're not able to recover from that. You know, only those that are drug assisted can actually get away with it, you know. But even the younger guys who are, you know, naturally producing all these wonderful, you know, goodies for, you know, regenerating the body and strength and recovery, they're the ones that are breaking down too. So there's something that's not right there. And I think that's what people just need to be mindful of, is, you know, look at yourself, see where your limit is, and then slowly just go a little bit past, just move the needle. You know, you don't need to, like, climb Mount Everest on your first weekend, you know, like, just slowly be consistent and exercise more as, like, a way to energize and feel good. And then the aesthetics part seems to, in my experience, just kind of come.
Well, I think it goes back to, what is your why, right? Why are you doing it in the first place? And it really depends on what your vision is for your life, you know? I think that aesthetics are a really poor marker for the vision, right? You know, in a lot of ways. You might want abs, but why do you want abs? To be more attractive to the opposite sex? And just in my experience, as somebody who's been at sub 5% body fat before, the opposite sex really doesn't like that much most of the time. But, you know, is it to be healthy? Well, then, you know, think about what is actually going to make you healthy. And if something's making you brain dead, if something's making you go nuts because you missed your 6 ounces of chicken breast 2 hours ago, then that's probably not going to be the best thing for your health, because you're just adding more stress and anxiety to your life over something that probably really doesn't matter and actually isn't really scientifically sound toward getting you toward better health in the first place.
Like, I respect people that go for it. Like, mm-hmm. they want to experience that. They want to have that kind of body. Then they have to, you know, kind of do certain things that aren't necessarily healthy to achieve it. And they may not feel great, but they achieved it. They have a picture of it. They right. maybe won a contest. That's awesome. That's the human experience. You know, you got to experience it. You did.
Yep.
And after your last contest, you're like, fuck this, man. I don't want to do this anymore, man. I feel like,
yeah. You yeah. know. No. And you know, that was kind of a come to Jesus moment in my life and where I wanted to bring my personal life and my health and everything. And, you know, understanding that training for that show not only made me more unhealthy, but was also kind of messing with my personal life and my relationship with my girlfriend. Not that I think that's the be all end all of how you should make decisions on things, but for me and my vision for how I want to live, you know, it really didn't match anymore. And so that's when I decided that I was kind of done with bodybuilding and done with that whole thing. But, you know, I think, back to kind of the whole issue of problems and happiness and things like that, it's also the context, you know what I mean? The context of where you're putting your attention and why you want happiness in the first place. Obviously, we want happiness because we all want to live good lives. We want lives of purpose. But in some aspects, we have to ask ourselves, what is happiness? And why do we want to be happy in the first place? You know, it's and maybe it's just late and I'm talking in circles here. But I think that, you know, you take Andrew, for example, you know, your career as a special forces operator, there were probably things that made you happy that would be hellish to other people, you know, as far as training goes and things like that. And then
my sick fetishes are be a different podcast.
Yeah. 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 We'll talk about that another podcast, but it's all relative. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, happiness or, Is it another way of, cause you know, that can be, again, whatever is going on in life, but to actually have a sense of fulfillment, you know, it's, for me, it's, you know, I've been happy, I've been sad, but, when I feel like I'm living mm-hmm. and, you know, I'm grateful for the life that I've had and all the experiences and the things I've seen, the people I've met, and the people that I've been able to help and serve, and, you know, this deeper thing that's, you know, I feel fulfilled, I feel satisfied. Like, if this was my last day on Earth, I feel like I did, like I feel full, basically, fulfilled, so... I think that, you know, searching for happiness, like, that's great, but what actually, like, fuels your soul, ultimately, it's, I think that's the way to go out, in my opinion.
Yeah, man, it's the experience, it's the road that leads to that, you know what I mean? Because what we're talking about with emotions, you know, happiness is just that, it's an emotion, and we realize that nothing is constant, nothing. Everything is constantly changing and evolving. Our state, our mental state, how we feel, our sensory perceptions. And so we know that that's going to change. And so happiness is knowing that I can
elevate my internal state, regardless of my external circumstances, external environment, external surroundings. I can be greater than that. And that doesn't mean I'm going to be happy 24/7. And I think that goes exactly what you're saying, Tony. It's fulfillment. And it doesn't mean we walk around 24/7 fulfilled, but am I doing things that elevate myself and elevate everyone I come in contact with? That's the script for my life. So then every thought, every motion, every action, every means of communication elevates every person I come across, to include myself. And we have to earn it every day. You know, that's about the only thing I'm certain of.
That's very, very valuable. I think that there's so many of us out there who really can do things and live a really good life and elevate ourselves each day in spite of whatever circumstances we're in. You know, if you're living in a blank room with just a mattress and, you know, some books and a dumbbell, you know what I mean? There's a lot of ways that you can improve yourself. You can work on yourself. You can live within yourself to try to become better each day. And I think what matters in a lot of ways is us being able to work together and to push ourselves to see beyond our own circumstances and how we might be able to impact other people and define those things that could bring greater meaning to our lives. And I think when we stop doing that and we start to look at the world as something that is either not giving us what we want or that's there just to give us what we want, that's when we start to get into trouble. And I think we are getting and running out of steam right now because my brain is starting to turn to mush. I'm sorry if anything I said in the past 10 minutes sounds like gibberish, but you know, we're having an amazing conversation here on this, this awesome Saturday morning now, Friday night. You know, want to bring you in on these from time to time because we tend to get together and just talk about life. And I think that's something that more of us in this community need to do. And stop looking at life at face value and start looking at some of the deeper things. Because I think you'll find if you start to look a little bit deeper, your life is pretty awesome. Regardless of how much you think it might suck right now, it is pretty awesome. Because you're in a place and time where you can exchange ideas, where you can exchange love for other people. That's not just romantic love. That's being able to do good things for other people. And you can have an impact just by being a good person and just by conveying love to other people. So, anything else, guys?
You nailed it, man.
That's the wrap.
Cool. All right, guys, we'll talk to you next time. All right, guys, so that was a conversation between myself, Andrew Marr, and Tony Flo-Real in Redondo Beach, California. And it was just basically us sitting around talking about life. And one of the things I want to encourage all of you to do is to have similar conversations amongst yourselves. You know, we look at life these days and what we define as happiness. And sometimes we miss the fact that we can derive happiness from some of the simplest things, a good conversation with friends, a good walk outside, you know, just playing around with our dogs. And we miss that because in so many ways, society really encourages us to complicate our lives when a lot of times we can discover the meaning of our own lives in things that we already have. So I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. And if you did enjoy it, please give us a review on iTunes. Let us know what you liked. Let us know what you didn't like. It really helps us to make this podcast better. And it also helps us to spread the message. The more reviews we get on iTunes, the more people know about us. Second, we have so much content up at warriorsoulfitness.com, and we're building content over at warriorsoulagoji.com. So check some of that stuff out. And if you guys have any questions for us at all, please send them to us. We'd love to answer them on the podcast at info@warriorsoulapparel.com. We're going to be doing some question and answer episodes very soon. So until next week, we will talk to you then. We've got a great episode lined up for you next week with an amazing veteran-owned company that I will announce toward the middle of the week. So until then, I will talk to you guys soon.